Maybe they can't get together. Maybe there's hardly enough to get together. Or maybe they're fearful to get together in a way like this. I'm going to start with a few verses because this topic is a presentation more so than an inspirational meeting. But I thought of some verses this morning as I was thinking about what I'll talk about tonight. In Proverbs, I'm just going to read about four verses, Proverbs 8, starting at verse 12. I, wisdom, dwell with prudence and find out knowledge of witty inventions. The fear of the Lord is to hate evil, pride, and arrogancy, and the evil way. And the froward mouth do I hate. Counsel is mine and sound wisdom. I am understanding. I have strength. And these are the verses that I wanted us to hear. And remember, and this is even in Proverbs, in the Old Testament. By me kings reign and princes decree justice. By me princes rule and nobles, even all the judges of the earth. I love them that love me. And so on. We keep reading. The king's heart is in the hand of the Lord. Well, it sounds to me like you have a representative here that has served in a CAST program. So I don't know that I'm even needed. Has anyone else? Other than Brother Mose, is it Mose? Anyone else here has served in a CAST work? All right. Very good. Then I'm not sure. I guess I drove 2 hours, but we'll talk about it. Have some qualified brothers here. Not every congregation has this. I talked with our conference deacons a few months ago about this because I was asked to, and there was one of our, I think only one of our deacons that is young enough to have served in CASP. So, anyhow, Lord willing, there'll be more. So what is CASP? Well, Brother Moses already told us it's Conservative Anabaptist Service Program. And I'm not a historian, but I feel like in order to talk about this correctly, for us to understand it, we've got to talk about history. Some people are confused about it and just think it's another disaster relief program, and it is, but it isn't. It always runs as a four-week program, and that was because some of the bylaws that were laid down back in the early days, and we'll talk about that. Over the years, and I don't know where to insert this, and I'm going to have to stick with my notes, or I might get off track and wander too long. Oh, I did want to say at the end, I would like to open it up if you have any questions. I may or may not be able to answer them, but I want you to understand what this is about. Over the years, because I was involved since the earliest days with CASP, even though I never served on the program, there was at times there was ordained brothers even that said, why, what's the point of CASP? The government has stated they don't expect there to ever be another draft. Why? So why do we even do CASP? And so I hope to answer some of those questions. If you have those, or if you have thoughts of wondering what's the reason for this. So that's why I want to talk about history just a little bit. So America was established as a country of religious freedom. I think we all know that if we pay attention in school, and we know that it's what we live in today, religious freedom. In colonial times, there was conscription, or there was not volunteer military. You were expected to serve in colonial times. But it was generally accepted to hire a substitute to go and enlist, and you would pay them. You would pay, not necessarily pay them, but you would have to pay to keep from being enlisting in the military. And during the Civil War, and again, this is all stuff I gleaned from reading, not because I'm a historian, but during the Civil War, the COs in the North could pay someone $300 to serve in their stead to get an exemption. And $300 in the Civil War is roughly that $11,000, $12,000 bracket today, roughly. And maybe more, but that's just what AI or Google told me. So they hired someone to take their place. They could pay their way out, and some hired. But there's stories, accounts of men that dealt with a lot of guilt when the one that they hired to take their place was actually gave their lives in military service. And they suffered guilt from that, which I can understand that. If you hired the substitute, then they go and lost their life. Probably were indebted to them and their family, I would think. Others went to military camps and suffered pretty much abuse. Men in the South, especially in Virginia, they didn't have a way out. A lot of them escaped to West Virginia to get away from it. During World War I, there was conscientious objectors then, and they were treated very poorly. And it was stated that the young boys that spoke German were treated even more poorly than the rest, because the Germans were the enemies. So they were really looked down on and treated even more poorly. In World War II, things got a little better. There was a man by the name of General Louis B. Hershey that was raised among the Mennonites and Amish in Indiana. And his grandfather had been a Mennonite, even though he himself was never part of the Mennonite faith. But he was appointed as director of the Selective Service System in 1941, and he had a heart for the COs. And so he created the alternative service arm of the Selective Service that we have today. We still have the alternative service arm of the Selective Service Board. Started that in 1941, and the CPS, or Civilian Public Service, was started at that point, was formed, and continued until 1947. And these civilian public service camps were set up in camps that government had provided, and provided work for the men during the, they had set up these camps during the Depression to provide work for men. And so these were now sitting pretty much vacant in the late 40s. And so they used these camps to house the conscientious objectors. And their work involved road building, building fire towers, trail clearing, and some forest fighting, which you get around, I'm sure, in this area. In our area, there's still a number of fire towers from back in the days when they were manned, and a lot of them were manned till more recent times, but they were responsible for building these. There was also some work done in mental hospitals as well. At that time, the COs, or the conscientious objectors, were placed in camps that were generally, so let's say there was, you live in Mars and there's a camp in Wellsboro, you wouldn't have been sent to Wellsboro, you'd have been sent to, someplace farther away, Williamsport, not that far, but back in the 40s it was farther away. Get you away from your local area, because it would mimic what the men that were drafted in your community were sent away from their homes to a camp. And so they sent them farther away from home, typically. It's noted that spiritual vitality was lacking in most of the camps, and there was a lot of spiritual casualties. There was not many services. There was some, but not many worship services. And this was all supposed to be conscientious objector boys, young men, but the things were really lacking in the camps. By early 1950s, the Korean War was underway, and for a short period, COs were automatically exempted from going to the war, but then after that, the 1W program was started, and it provided alternate service. And the military, if you do a search, I think there's like 14 or more military classifications, and I don't know if they're still used today or not, but 1W meant that the military was not an option at all. You were completely exempt from military service. There was 1AO, which was people like Seventh-day Adventists and some of them that were not opposed to being part of the military. They would be in non-combatant roles, but they were opposed to combatant. And then there was also 1O, that they were exempted from any military service or any alternate service. And I should have asked some men, because there's still some living, if 1-0 was a classification you got, if you got deferred because of, there was farm deferments, there was medical deferments that were allowed during this time, and maybe we'll talk a little bit more about those. So the 1-0 programs were started, and from the start it was mainly hospital employment. They served in a lot of hospitals, and that draft lasted through the Vietnam War until it was lifted in 1973. So here we are approximately 53 years since the last person would have been drafted. And you have a draftee as part of this congregation. I think you all know him. So if you ever corner Brother Willard, he can tell you some stories about being a draftee and where he served. And since he's not here, I'll tell you. Maybe you already know, but he served on a farm near Allentown from 66 to 68. It was after he was married. And the farm he worked on provided milk for some local hospitals. So he served on a farm. My wife has an uncle that served in Baltimore in a hospital. And back in that day, he didn't need all the work of college and all that, and he became a respiratory therapist and served in that capacity up until into the 90s. He still worked part-time serving as a respiratory therapist, hooking people up to oxygen and all that kind of thing. Today, you'd probably have to go to school for 4 years or more, I don't know, till you could even throw oxygen on somebody. But he learned that during his 1W service. Another of my wife's uncles served in the maintenance department at the Danville Hospital. And I think the Eastern had started the Danville unit, and that's where I understand the Danville Church started out of that, because there was an alternate service program right there in Danville. And if I'm wrong with that, you can correct me later, some of you that know more about them than I do. I had an uncle on my dad's side, so the draft was lifted right before my dad would have been called up. He was ready. He was 18. Actually, I think he was 19, but he hadn't been called up yet. And the way the system, I don't understand the system. It's a lottery system, so not everybody was called equally at the same time, but he did not have to serve. So my dad is almost 75, so the people that would have served, the men that would have served, are all that age and older, at least 75. Many of them are older, and there's few of them left. Now, many of you probably have, maybe a few of you have dads, but some of you have grandfathers, and some of you have great-grandfathers, maybe that would have served in some type of alternate service. But 53 years later, we know little to nothing about it, most of us. So back to that. I had an uncle that served somewhere on the West Coast, and it was became a spiritual drain to him, and he never did come back to a very conservative church, and today he's divorced and remarried. I'm not saying it's all linked to a 1W program, but definitely there's a lot of spiritual casualties during that time. Then I have another uncle that had a heart murmur, and so he had a medical deferment and did not have to serve. There's a number of them out there. So now let's bring it up to date. So 2005, for what I understand, the way this CASP got started, in 2005, a letter came from Paris, France, to an Amish Mennonite preacher in Missouri. It was a cousin of his that lived in Paris that was watching his television and listening to the news, and heard about this special meeting that the Church of Brethren was hosting with the Selective Service Board, and their meeting in, I think, Illinois. And so he knew this cousin of his had served in the 1W program and knew had keen interest in this kind of thing, and he said, you know, you maybe ought to get in touch with somebody in the Church of the Brethren and see if you can get to that meeting. And this fellow worked it out and had several others that attended with him to this meeting. And they got to speak to the alternative service director, and her words to them were, let me back up, the 1W programs up until this time, the 1W programs were provided by the military. They gave them opportunities. They said, here's a hospital you can serve in. I should have verified some more information, but Eastern, I don't know if there's other church groups, but the Eastern group had started their own works, so they did not have the boys were in with just any other young men. So Baltimore, I'm not sure about Baltimore, but I know Danville and maybe Delaware. Maybe at least two programs that Eastern had going. But by and large, they were government programs, and the government put you there. They told you where you could serve, gave you the opportunity to serve at a variety of places, but they ultimately directed it. The Director of Alternative Service told them at this 2005 meeting that the government will work with qualified employers in the event of a draft, meaning the government will not provide the place to serve. You will need to find the place to serve, but they will work with these qualified people. And she told them that the time to plan for it is now. Do not wait till there's a draft. So at that point, five men were formed and a board, and they went to Christian Ministries to request help to get organized. And they chose Christian Ministries because of a wide variety of opportunities that Christian Aid has. And it's not just hospitals. I'm getting ahead of myself, so I better find it in my notes so I don't say the wrong thing. Anyhow, we'll get to it later. The other thing about Christian Ministries is they are known around the world for their programs and how they help other people. And I don't know if I have this later, but some of the things that make that Selective Service has laid out that are opportunities for people are things that are have to do with the welfare of the nation and other nations that the United States works with, the welfare of the people, also with service and hospitals, education. I'm not sure what the whole list is. There's a number of things, and so you can fit a lot of things underneath that and Christianity. Well, here I have it. Maintenance of national health, safety, or interest. Anything that contributes to maintenance of national health, safety, or interest. And so there's a lot of things that fit under that. There's disaster, there's forestry, there's social services. They even said another one might be jobs that were vacated by draftees in the event of a draft. So there may be opportunity for fellows to serve close home. But let's back up. So CASP was formed at that point, and Pilgrim Mennonite Conference got involved in 06, and that's when I got involved, and have been involved ever since. And now that group, we started out as about five of us church groups back in the early days. There's now over 20 groups that are part of this with Christian Ministries. So what does CASP do today? So I'm part of the board, and we meet in Ohio twice a year. So I am still the link between our church conference and Pilgrim and also Living Hope Conference to Christian Ministries. And we meet twice a year. So what do? We actually maintain an MOU, which is a Memorandum of Understanding. So we need to keep that up to date with the Selective Service, with Washington. They want to have, you know, there's still a working relationship between us, and we need to keep that. So we endeavor to stay current with issues that may be coming up. And also this requires the groups that are involved to operate projects at least biannually. So every other year we need to operate a project, which what Brother Mose was talking about, we operated two back-to-back. I think that was a year. It was our first time. I think we operated 2 4-week programs in New Orleans back in 2007, I think it was, something like that. So far, to date, we've operated 10 projects, which includes about 18,000 hours and 100 different volunteers. And not all of them were in the United States. Some of them were international. There was a Bangladesh project. There was also one in Honduras, Puerto Rico. And then I'm not sure what else I'm missing. I don't have them written down, but we had a number around the state and forestry projects and rebuilding projects. And here in about less than a week, isn't it, Tyler? Yeah, less than a week, one kicks off in Mississippi, and Tyler's going as a crew leader. So we're getting started with a project here real shortly. So these projects are supposed to mimic boot camp, which is what the military boys would have to go through. Boot camp is what it's called. It's a 10-week thing. Boot camp is, but it's we had an employee that went to boot camp. He wanted to join the military. He went to boot camp. I just remember his sister, who worked for us at the time, and their mother, and her mother talking about how this is such a terrible thing. Noah got sent to boot camp. They didn't hear from Noah. I forget how many weeks it was of that 10 weeks. And they would get one phone. They got one phone call about 3 or 4 weeks in. And he had 30 seconds. Literally, he was limited to 30 seconds to say, hey, this is where I am. I'm okay. Everything's going well. Goodbye. That's about the length of it. We're not that hard on our boys in boot camp. They don't have their cell phones. They're not supposed to. But they get to have their cell phones during in the evening. We'll let that up to the director that's there. He may limit them. He may not let them have their phones every day, but typically they get access to them more than 30 seconds in 4 weeks. So it's supposed to mimic boot camp, controlled contact with the outside world. That's what the military boys are into, and so we try and keep our programs like that as well. A disciplined environment. Evening Bible study instead of play is generally the focus. And there's evangelism opportunities that are looked for as well. And I would think in the project, okay, in the forestry projects, it's a little different. You're not around a lot of community folks, but I would think there in Columbia, Mississippi, there'll probably be some community work done. We typically do that kind of thing, cottage meetings. And if Christian Aid's established there, they often have a song service at least once or twice during that time where they invite community in, so I'm not sure what all will be in store there for Columbia. So a careful log is kept about each ASW. Tyler's going to be responsible to keep some of that log, and so will the house parents over there will also keep some of the log. The job coordinator, who in this case will be there by Christian Ministries, will help keep that log with the ASWs. The hours worked, the work performance, their conduct, and these reports are filed with CAM, and they're available to be sent to Selective Service if they ask for them. It's not like it carries weight in the event of a draft, but it carries a record that this organization has done this. They know what they're doing, and we can show by our paperwork that we are prepared and ready. We're doing two things with the project. We're getting our feet wet, knowing how to run the project, and then we're also establishing a precedent that's seen by the Selective Service. And I will tell you, they come to our meetings typically about every other year, to our Ohio meetings in the summer, and they're favorably impressed, I would say, very favorably impressed with what they see us doing. And so we continue to do it. Brother Ira used to remind us, again, I asked the question earlier, why do this when the draft is not even supposed to happen? Well, Brother Ira Mass reminded us that back in the day, Ukraine was a voluntary military, and they went to conscription overnight. And Brother Moe's already pointed to this, but 53 years later, it has come up. It came up about a week ago. I know it was a news reporter that brought it up. What's going to happen about the draft? Are you considering the draft? So it's still very much in the public's mind. And I would say, not to cast fear, but if things don't go right in Iran and something was to happen to Cuba, just making up a story here, that they need more boots on the ground. It's not impossible that the military would, that the Congress would consider a draft. The president can't reinstate it, but he can introduce it, but it has to be a vote of Congress. I don't want to throw fear in anyone's heart, but we must also be real with the facts that the country could do that again. We are not home yet. We are still on a sojourn. Well, I already cut long enough here, so what can we skip here? So what happens if there is a draft? They've already established that there would be at least 120 days till we'd have to have a camp up and running, or camps. We need more than one because there's quite a few young men that would likely need to find a place. We need to get somewhere. A little bit of what would happen is each state has a director, and I don't have the Pennsylvania director's name right off the top of my head. Didn't look it up for sure. But there's local draft boards, and Pennsylvania supposedly has 85 draft boards set up around the state. And so you may know some of these men. They're civilians that are on these draft boards, generally 5-member draft boards. And there's supposed to be 425 draft board men or draft board individuals in the state of Pennsylvania. And they're made up of regular citizens. And I think there's a way you can find them out. I'd not go looking, but there's a way you probably could find out who your local draft board is. So the young men would receive a notice to appear before this draft board for the questioning process. And after they passed their physical examination, they would go to this questioning process. And these men that are on the draft board are supposed to be getting annual training. I think one day annually, it might be an online training, but to stay current. And they're trained to decipher, the main part of their training is to decipher the authenticity of the draftees, of who they're examining. And it's been stated by the Selective Service, and I quote, "We don't care what your preacher believes or what your dad believes, we want to know what you believe." And that's the kind of questioning they would use on the young men. men ages 18 to 26, or 18 through the age of 25, single young men, would be the first ones that would be drafted. And I think they would start either age 20 or 21, and then they would come down to 18, like 20, 19, 18, and then 21 on up in their draft process in order to get enough of young men to serve. Just to give you a little idea, less than 1% of the U.S. population are currently serving in the military. In 1995, 40% of those that were ages 16 to 24, and I know they can't serve at age 16, but they could be enlisted of some sort, were serving in some type of military, 40% of the population. In 2016, that number was down to 15%. And they're also saying that in the last decade, well, this information is rather old, but in the decade from 08 to 18, only 27% of the male population of ages 18 to 26 would have been eligible for military service for a variety of reasons. So just to bring that, I just Googled this. In the age bracket in the United States of 19-year-olds, in the most recent census, there's about 2.3 million 19-year-old males as of 2024, whatever it was. So you take that number, 27% of those, only 27% would be eligible to serve in the military. That takes it to 621,000. And I think it was, I didn't write it down, but one of the wars, they drafted several million. I think as high as 10 million were needed for one of the wars. And didn't all come through draftees, but it was through draftees and voluntary. So I just had to think, you know, if a draft were to happen and they say we need 2 million men, they would need at least three age brackets to get their men. So it could be pretty drastic if it was to ever happen again. Young women will not be considered candidates at this point. I won't go into the lengthy survey and meetings that were held back in 2018, but the opinion of the public of 10 meetings that were held across the country were that women should not be part of it. So at this point, Congress has not considered women to be eligible for the draft. Some books that you all, for those of us who don't have a knowledge or very little knowledge, I don't want to just look at the young fellows or the fellows. This is for anybody. And maybe you've read these books. Some of these are old. Circle of Love is written from a setting. The book Circle of Love, written by Romaine Stauffer, is written from a setting of a 1W program. There's another book written called The Call of the SSS. And that's written by a fellow from more of an Amish background. And so it reads a little differently than some books, but still has some valuable information in it. And another very interesting book, it kind of details his life in Zanesville, Ohio, is The Debt I Owe, written by Johnny Miller. And some of you, I'm sure, have heard of Johnny Miller. He's part of Christian Ministries, served in Romania for many years. Get that book and read it. Very interesting. He's a very good storyteller and writer. Something else that you all need to know, and maybe Brother Curtis carried this back from our meeting, and that is that all young men must register at age 18. Regardless of your CO or not, if you want to serve in the military, you just need to register. And some states use the driver's license info to contact them. But you can register. It must be done online or at the post office. I think that is all I have. I will open it up now. Oh, yeah, one more thing I wanted to say. If a draft were to happen, when you think about something like special forces, which not everybody that enlists for the military gets involved in special forces, but they cannot train someone for special forces in 10 weeks' time or in 120 days' time. Special forces is oftentimes an 8-month training. A Navy SEAL, to get through everything in the Navy SEAL, that training is 16 months. So even if a draft were to happen, it takes a lot of time for the military to get the kind of men they need. And I know I'm talking from a military standpoint. Obviously, we are looking at it from alternative service standpoint. But a lot of training is needed for the military to get the men they want or that they feel they need. So what questions do you have? I already took up a half hour, and I think that's enough. Do you have any questions about this? So they tell us that, obviously, that we need to become a qualified employer. And so part of the MOU is that we are a qualified employer. And in order to say that or have our words line up, we have to have the action. So we're doing the projects. These church groups are all doing projects. So we are a qualified employer. We're doing these projects, documenting what we do, pictures of what we do, hours logged. And they keep verbally saying it, but it's also included in the MOU that gets signed every 5 years, I think. Goes again to the Selective Service. And so it's a memorandum of understanding, unless they're going to go back on that, which I guess they could, but that is the agreement that's in place, and we're continuing to maintain it. Anyone else? Okay, it's like 20 of them. So there's a lot of what I'm going to call splinter New Order Amish groups. So you got several, at least one or two from Michigan. There's Midwest Beachy Amish. There's Holmes County New Order Amish. There's Tampico churches, which are mainly out in Missouri. There's Berea Amish Mennonite. There's Maranatha Amish Mennonite. There's Beachy Amish, which is probably the largest group. They do a project. They do two projects every year because they have thousands of young men because they represent, I don't know, 10,000 or more members. Keystone Nationwide Fellowship, Mennonite Christian Fellowship, Midwest Fellowship, Mid-Atlantic Fellowship. I know I'm missing some, but that's just a lot of church groups that you would recognize. Yes. In order to be, so Christian Aid Ministries, the CASP board at Christian Aid has guidelines, and that is if your church group wants to be part of us, here's some guidelines. And one of them is you got to have a project every other year. Dunker Brothers is another one, and Old German Baptist New Conference. It's part of the guidelines. We've got to have a project every other year. And I'm beginning to wonder if spring's the right time because we struggled, did not get enough ASWs. I mean, we're going, but we should have more ASWs, which is more workers. I'm not sure why we can't shake more young men loose. But anybody else? Right, whether or not that counts anything, he starts to go before the draft board and get questioned.
Did they ever talk about how they evaluated individual lives?
Oh, yes. Yeah, there was a meeting at Martindale Fellowship Center several years ago. I think the Harmony group put that on, where they actually had some. They actually had the Selective Service come and do more of a kind of a mock-up draft board, and they grilled the young fellows. So a young man can have an advisor that can be with him, a representative that's allowed to be with him. And if that person's not allowed to answer for him, but they're allowed to advise him. And if the draft board says no, you don't qualify, he can appeal it. He has the opportunity to appeal it and get another hearing he can take it up the chain of command a bit further. But they've said they don't check records. You know, some of the thing is they're going to check driving record and all those kind of things. They say, no, they're not going to do that. I don't believe that. I think they probably could. Social media, they're gonna. There's gonna be a way to check people out. I'm not saying they will. They say they won't, but I'm not convinced that they wouldn't. Anyone else? So the one that we did was actually maintaining the Lower Trail, which is actually right close to us. 21 miles of it needed to be cleaned up to get trees back that might fall on the trail. That wasn't necessarily a forestry project, but that's the type of thing we did. We had to have chainsaw safety and all that, and all the gear. I shouldn't say all the gear, a bit of gear. But they cleared that back, got trees taken back. But that was for the Rails to Trails organization. But forestry projects are some that go on annually, and they're building bridges on some of these trails. They're also just building lodges or pavilions in North or South Carolina. There's the Pisgah, there's Mount Eagle, there's just names I hear, I don't know much about them. But the one that I wish we could do, I would get excited about, because I like excitement, is there's the Boundary Waters Trail up in Minnesota. It's like several thousand miles long. And the Beachy group goes up there, I think, every year. They take about five or six fellows in, and they fly and they do food drops and all that. They're tenting for a month. Some of them, they're not even allowed to use chainsaws at some of those. But they're maintaining a trail. And that's another type of forestry project that gets done. I think it'd be... I'm told that right here in Pennsylvania, there's a trail that... I don't know which one it is, that we could be getting involved in too if we wanted to. That's not quite as remote as that, but still as remote. I don't want to cut anything off, because if you have questions, I want to answer for the benefit of everyone. Let every soul be subject unto the higher powers. There's no power. Oh, that's why I've turned the wrong passage. There's the verses I want, but it's not Hebrews 13, it's Romans 13. The powers that be are ordained of God. So God has put the powers that are in place, and if they decide to do a draft, he knows about it already. And he's going to make a way around it, whether it's fleeing the country like Matthew talks about in the last days. Men will have to flee. I don't know what it would be. And I don't want to put terror in anyone's heart. But it's good to know about it and be ready for whatever tests the Lord may allow us. We are not promised that America, running on 250 years of freedom, needs to stay there. We're not promised that. But thank God for the privilege we have today. God bless you.